everybody, welcome to the Highlight Show. This is a show within our show where we sit down and talk to people doing really cool stuff. It could be someone starting a restaurant, it could be a youth group, it could be somebody who has just gone through something hard and has a really cool story to tell. We sit down with them, we pick their brains, and we glean what life lessons we can learn from their journey. Give it a listen. Welcome to the podcast, everybody. We're here with Krista, who's been with us before. It's been a long time.
Yes, it has.
But I'm glad to be back, glad to be talking to you again. Since we talked last time, you've kind of shifted gears quite a bit. So why don't you tell everybody kind of what you're doing now, what's been going on, and then we'll jump into it.
Yeah. So it is good to be back, and it's been fun to follow the journey of the podcast since I was last on quite a few years ago. But I am currently a full-time residential faculty at Mesa Community College, and I am a marketing and social media professor there. I also am a part-time business coach and trainer for a company called SBE, Service Business Evolution. And so, as we were talking about before this interview, I feel like my two jobs complement each other pretty well, and both have a lot of flexibility. So, that's kind of where I am now.
Yeah, I like that. It makes a lot of sense. We connected a long time ago in like a teaching, coaching, development kind of space. So, yep. I mean, you haven't wavered tremendously, right? Like you just kind of seem like maybe refined and found a stronger footing or something, you know, I don't know what to say, but like you've been in that same world for a long time.
Yes.
So that's good that I'm happy that you found something super solid to build on. So that's cool. So one of the questions that we've kind of been starting with is the faith journey. So we're talking faith and career and how those kind of inform each other. Were you brought up in the faith or brought up in the church, or like where did your faith journey start?
Sort of. So it's kind of interesting. My parents divorced when I was pretty young, but my parents came from Finland, where everybody is culturally Lutheran. Hmm. And then my dad remarried somebody that was a fairly devout Catholic at the time. She's since wavered, but so I grew up kind of with both of those. But my parents wanted to put me in a Lutheran school. So starting with first grade, I went to Christian schools, in fact, all the way through college. And so that's really where it started. But it wasn't like there weren't devotions at home. There wasn't Bible lessons at home. Right. It wasn't a weekly. My stepmom, I did go to Mass with her and my brother quite a bit. But my mom, it was like Christmas and Easter, right?
Yeah.
And my dad was the same thing.
Holidays.
My dad was dragged Christmas and Easter. But I remember at a pretty young age, because of my schooling and having amazing teachers, and we had chapel twice a week, that I feel like I had... I believe that I was saved pretty young, probably like 6 or 7.
Okay.
But it was in high school where I really figured out what it meant to mm-hmm. be a Christ follower. And that was, I was a part of Fellowship for Christian Athletes.
Okay.
At FCA.
Yep.
And we were at one of our leader is a teacher at our high school, but he was also like the leader of our FCA chapter. We were at his house for a barbecue. And he was our biology teacher. He was my softball coach. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. small private school.
Right,
so
right.
Everybody had a lot of jobs. So I knew him very well. And we were in the kitchen talking. I don't even remember exactly about what, but it came up. He was like, so you do all these things, you know, I'm seeing all the acts. But he's like, have you actually made the decision to repent of your sins and follow Jesus as your Lord and Savior? And I was like, I'm not sure. He's like, well, let's do it right now.
Yeah. So you need that direct question sometimes.
You know? And so like if you ask me when was I for sure 100% saved, it was that when I was 16 and junior in high school. So.
Nice. Yeah, it's funny. I've said it to everybody that I've talked to is that like 16 is such a pivotal age. Almost everyone I've spoken to about their faith journey, 16 is when they either decide for or against. They either go all in or they go wander off. Right. And so pivotal. It's really interesting how every story is different,
right?
But the same at certain points, right? Like everybody kind of has the pinch points.
Yeah.
So I've got a couple of questions for you. One, so are you still familiar with like the Lutheran denomination?
Absolutely.
So was it ELCA?
Yes.
Okay. So was the ELCA that you grew up with the same as the ELCA?
Absolutely
that?
Not.
I knew the answer to the question. Like I was absolutely leading that.
Yeah. Well, but it's funny. So my high school was Missouri Synod, And so I had some teachers who'd be like, ooh, ELCA, they're a little liberal over there, you know. Mm-hmm. So I did in high school start to hear that a little bit.
So even back then, they were still on the liberal side.
Yeah, but nothing like you see today.
Not now. No. Yeah, they've kind of, they've flown the cuckoo's nest for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And I attended, I actually had a roommate for 5 years who, she was also Lutheran, and so she and I attended church together for 5 years or whatever. But yep. So I attended Lutheran churches up until my husband and I were engaged when I was 26. Mm-hmm. And we started then looking for a church together.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I really, you know, 20 plus years of my life, I went to Lutheran church. So.
Yeah. That was my wife's kind of story too. Like, that was what she grew up in.
Yeah.
And, you know, we got our girls now, and I'm like looking at theological formation, and I'm like, babe, like, I know this community is nice, but we got to move.
Yeah.
Like, I need these girls to be influenced with better theology.
Yeah.
Like, I can't do this one, right?
Yeah.
But then also the FCA on the other side, like, they do good work, right? Like,
yes.
I haven't heard about them in quite a while, but, like, when I do hear about them, like, their impact has been pretty legit.
Yeah.
And not particularly trendy, but, like, pretty solid. Is that true or not?
Yeah. In fact, I still have college students to this day that are counselors for their camps over the summer for high school students. I think they even have college chapters as well, like at campuses. My brother-in-law, who's 8 years younger, I remember he was very involved all the way through college, even at USC with FCA. So I do know they grab athletes, right? Here, use your teammate. And teammates, it's so easy. Hey, we're having a barbecue, right?
Yeah.
And so they do a really good job of pulling in athletes, because teammates will normally go where their teammates go. And I think it's pretty cool.
And that's a rough area to go by yourself, right? Like, I mean, you're always on the road. You're always doing, like, even in college, like, I mean, you're going everywhere. Like, so it's good to have community, I guess, is what I'm saying, right? Where you're not... You don't feel alone or peer pressured, you know? So at 16, right, you got the direct question, made the choice. How did you go from there? Like, what steps, like, were you just like, okay, did you just kind of keep doing the things you were doing just with a different assurance? Or, like, what did it look like after that?
Yeah, I think because I, my teacher had noticed, my FCA leader was, I was on chapel worship team, you know, I was a part of, like, a prayer, campus prayer leader.
You were already doing all this stuff. Yeah,
I was involved in a youth group at church, so it was, like, it was now, I knew that my heart and my motivations were true, and I did have that assurance.
It's nice when your outside life and inside life are consistent, right? That's different.
Yeah.
Okay, and so you said that you're in the marketing and business world, like, has that been consistent? Like, when you went into college, were you in that path there or?
Oddly enough, so this is interesting, faith related and college related, is I started my college career at University of the Pacific in Stockton, which is Central California. It's actually the oldest university in California. Beautiful, looks like an East Coast Ivy League school. But I went there for international relations because they have, at the time, and I think they may still have one of the best, they had the best undergraduate program for international relations in the country. And there were a lot of students going on into very prestigious master's programs from there. And I thought I wanted to work in that, like Department of State type stuff. Like, you know, I wanted to do. I had grown up bilingual. I spoke Spanish fluently at this point. And so I was like, cool. Like, yeah, I want to learn more languages. I want to, you know, use my
English. Do you really know 3 languages?
I know 5.
Shut up. I didn't know that.
Yeah. My parents are from Finland, so English is my second language. Finnish was my first. And then growing up in Southern California, Spanish. I started in second grade.
Yeah.
I worked in restaurants. I traveled to Mexico a ton with my mom. She's a travel agent, so she got free trips all the time. And so by the time I got to college, I was so fluent in Spanish that I was able to test out of Spanish as a requirement, and I took French and German instead.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool. It's one of those things where, like, if you learn a new language young, like, the capacity to learn languages is different.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then each one you learn after you learn your second one, each one thereafter is so much faster and easier to learn because your brain is wired for, like,
picking these things up.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So anyway, so I went to University of Pacific. And it's a, you know, secular, it started as a, I think, Methodist university, but of course became secular along the way. And every single freshman was required to take a class and I forget the name of the class, but it was using a book that had been put together by a board of professors from the school, and it was answering the great questions of life.
And interesting.
Each chapter had like 7 or 8 great questions of life, like how did the earth begin, you know, where do we go when we die, things like that.
Right.
And then it gave the answers based on different religions, world religions, Buddhism, Hinduism, Christianity, you know.
So like the world religions class.
But like framed kind of slightly differently.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I did misspeak earlier when I said I went to Christian school. I went one semester of non-Christian school, but then I transferred out. But so this was the first time in my life I was in a classroom of, I was the only Christian in a classroom of 20 students for this class.
Yeah.
And I had to defend my faith. And that was crazy because, like, I just hadn't, I mean, of course I had friends that were not Christian from other walks of life, but I was, here we are in ascending, discussing the great questions of life.
Yeah.
I'm the only one that believes my answers are what they are. And so that was like a huge test of my faith.
Right. And one of the things is that, you know, we grow up and we learn, we memorize and we participate, but nobody trains you to answer the questions,
right?
Like, and when you come into a confrontation, even though, even if it's a pleasant one, but like, as soon as somebody confronts you about, like, how many times have I got stuck where I'm just like, I don't know the answer to that because I've never been asked that question before. Like, why?
Yeah.
And you're like, because?
Yeah.
And you're like, that's not good enough. You got to do something more.
Yeah. And thankfully, I had taken a world religions class in my sophomore year of high school. So I had, you know, a little bit of like understanding of like the differences and similarities. But, you know, some people that kind of a class could have made them walk away or it made me dive so much deeper into my faith and like to want to defend and have the answers and be able to explain why I believe what I believed. So that's, it was actually good. A really cool thing for me.
Yeah.
That class. So that was my first like big test of like, I'm an adult now, here I am, and I have to defend it. And I feel like I did a good job. I don't know if I convinced anybody to come my way.
Right.
But I felt really good.
By the way, you went deeper, which is a big deal.
Right.
You know, because So I went through ASU and I graduated from the religions department, and I mean, their sole goal was to like strip religion of everything that was meaningful. Mm-hmm. I mean, like the religious teachers were like, no, this is not, you know, and you're like, man, this is not what I want.
Yeah.
But like you said, like if you can take the challenge and feel comfortable saying, I don't know, and then go research it, you know, like it doesn't shake your faith, but forces you to dig, then good.
I was amazed at, you know, the fact that I was able to answer sometimes right on the spot too, you know? So it was, you know, I think that obviously the Holy Spirit just prompting me with some of the right answers.
Yeah.
And I did have to go research other things, but I mean, there were many times where I just had an answer. I'm like, where did that come from?
Yeah.
Like,
that feels good.
Right?
Yeah,
right?
That feels good. But, nice. Okay. And so then, did you stay with that major or?
No. So then, for a variety of reasons, I decided I had to get out of that college.
Okay.
And Pepperdine University in Malibu had been my dream growing up. I grew up in Southern California, drove by it on the way to the beach.
Sure.
But I wanted to go away and I wanted this major, but I hated Stockton so much. It was miserable. And so I applied to transfer for my like 4 colleges for my spring semester. Not surprisingly, I applied to only Christian colleges for transferring, and I think it was kind of that class. Maybe like, you know, even as good as it was in some ways, I was like, this is not what I want, right?
Yeah.
But and so I got accepted to Pepperdine for transfer in my second semester freshman year. Got scholarships to match my scholarships.
Nice.
They did not have international relations at the time, so I changed to international management.
Okay.
Which started me down the business track.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. That's okay. That's interesting. That's it's funny how like factors outside of your control, so like a social factor almost, right? Like wanting to be in a social setting changes your major and career path. So it's not like something that you're like, "Oh, I'm going to choose this one." Like so few people know exactly what they want to be and just pinpoint that and pursue it forever. So many of us, like, we do something and we respond to something and it puts us in somewhere else, and you're like, oh, like, I ended up somewhere that I'm so much happier. I'm glad I ended up here, but it's not something you would have ever chosen willingly, you know? So, like, sometimes just responding to circumstances is how we follow God's will. You know, like, right. not all of us are like, God, tell me what to do. And then we go do it, you know.
Right.
Like, Moses was lucky. Like, most of us aren't that lucky.
Right.
You know.
Right. Well, and that was, you know, of course I prayed about it and everything like that. And that was the thing is, like, I didn't tell anybody that I had applied to transfer out. Nobody knew, not even my mom. Mm. And I came home for Thanksgiving. And my mom was like, hey, you know, here's the mail.
She's here's
like,
all these letters.
She's like, she's like, you have some college letters. Like, why are they still coming? And I was like, and she's like, yeah, there's a bunch of big ones, too. And I was like, so I'm like running through and I saw the one from Pepperdine. I just started screaming for like joy. And my mom was like, what is, and I told her and she's like, what? What? Like, she was so confused because I just,
so
you know.
Right.
And then I had called him, called the campus. I was like, I can only come if I can, you can match my scholarship. And they like, give us an hour. They called me back, like, we can match your scholarship. And I was like, cool. Like, I mean, so that was 100% like confirmation that this is where God would have me, which a little aside, not career and faith related, but my husband and my two best friends in the whole world are from Pepperdine. So,
but those are very much related, you
right.
know, like it's, the confirmations, you know, nice. Okay. So then, did you graduate from Pepperdine?
I did 3.5 years after. So right on time.
Yeah. Where'd you go from there? Into
sales. Yeah. I went to work for First American, not their title company, one of their subsidiaries for real estate solutions, selling software to appraisers, mortgage brokers. Mm. But I dove right into sales because I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do.
Right.
I knew I was going to have some student loans since I didn't have a full scholarship, right? I had a partial.
Sure.
My stepmom had always been very successful in sales, made good money. And I'd had all these people say, if you're not sure what to do, start with sales because it will help you understand all the facets of business.
That is really good advice. Because I've had a bunch of people say that, hey, if you know how to sell, like, you can be successful anywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, selling is one of those skills that it gets a dirty word. Like, it's kind of become a dirty word.
Yeah.
You know, like, did you have trouble reconciling sales with your personality, or were you pretty comfortable with it?
I think because seeing my stepmom, she was always in like B2B type sales, and that's what I was going to be doing.
Yeah.
And she was so successful at it and enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And then I'd worked in restaurants as a server forever, which is essentially selling,
it
right?
Is, like,
and so I knew I was good. I liked talking to people. I liked helping people like figure things out. You know, I'd been a trainer already in restaurants and things like that. And so I knew like, educating people about a product that might help them in their business is something I would like to do.
Yeah.
So it was not an issue. And then, you know, I was on my own. I'd been on my own for a long time, but on my own, student loans coming in soon. And it was a good base salary with a really good opportunity for commission. So like at 22 years old, I was able to make a lot more money than most of my friends.
Wow.
Because of sales.
Right. Yeah. No, that's, you know, if you're considering a communications degree, like, don't, you know, like go to do sales and then learn that because you can go anywhere from there.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. And then how did you transition from sales into marketing?
Yeah. So obviously sales and marketing normally work hand in hand. And so I got to know the marketing department at First American, you know, having to learn about things we needed, materials, collateral, you know, everything like that. And I got really interested in marketing, and I would start just asking questions. And eventually, I started my MBA, and I had a coworker who was like, "My wife is," and he knew I wanted to go to market. My wife just she's been running this marketing company out of her house with freelancers, but she's getting an office, and she needs an account manager to like help start managing all her clients.
Nice.
I think you two would get along. Do you want to meet her? And I was like, yes. And so I was 24 years old, 2 years into my sales career.
Wow.
Knew I wanted to go to marketing, had the opportunity, met her. She and I clicked. She had a vision. She was passionate. She was driven. And I was like, I want to learn from this woman.
Yeah.
And I just got thrown in the fire of direct mail, TV, radio, like, you know, logo, branding, everything with her. In fact, one of the first clients I worked on was Elone, which is a fairly large mortgage company. So...
Wow. Okay. So I'm probably jumping ahead. So we're going to jump ahead and go back and forth here a little bit. But so you're talking the marketing that you're doing, traditional marketing, right?
Yes.
Or old school marketing.
Oh, this was 2003. So.
Right. So that was, so how much time did you have in traditional marketing before the like digital marketing world exploded?
Not that long because it was in 2006 when I was working for a big time traditional ad agency. I was working on Verizon Wireless's Western. We had all of their Western United States business.
Yeah.
And one of the projects I got put on was their music and youth sponsorship. So they sponsored 14 music venues in the Western U.S. And they did a VIP tour with Fergie and the Black Eyed Peas. And they did record launch parties for like Maroon 5. And so I was involved with all these projects. And they were like, well, there's this thing called Twitter, and we think we need to use it for our whatever, you know, for promoting these music things, right? Yeah. We want to use text to whatever, like people can text a number and they'll show up on the screen at the concerts for us.
Oh, yeah.
Sponsored
by
Verizon. You know, we want to figure out how to use MySpace, like all these things. And the Verizon, being the big behemoth that they are, was like, and by the way, we found this company that says they know how to do all this. And so I got to work. I was the liaison with the very first social media marketing agency in the country for Verizon Wireless.
You're like on the ground floor. Yeah. That's fantastic.
So when I get in front of my students, I go, why I'm here to teach you social media is because I've literally been working in social media marketing since it started in 2006.
Right. Holy cow.
So yeah. So it was really cool. Like such an insane opportunity. And that my love for social media marketing really did start there because I saw the power of it already.
I was going to say, because, I mean, it's nice, too, that you got to be there with a tech company like Verizon, right, who would have pushed the limits on digital because that's their business, right? And like I was, like you just said it, being able to see the impact early. So, like, you weren't on that, or were you, or around those people who were like, oh, this is going to go away. This is just a fad.
I think I hear that. I've been hearing that until about maybe the last year or two still. You know, well, I work with blue-collar contractors, right? HVAC, okay, plumbers, sure, things like that. Yep. And they're like, oh, we don't need it. We get all our business word of mouth. I'm like, you still need it.
Yeah, yeah. That's interesting. So what was, like, when you were, like, looking, you kind of had one foot in the old world, one foot in the new world. Like, what was the biggest change? Obviously there's the technological change, but, like, what was the biggest cultural, social, like, what did you see that, like, really shift at that time?
I think the thing that I saw that was the biggest change that happened, it's happened very slowly, actually, because, like, the traditional, I stayed in traditional marketing for a very long time. It was
still
the majority.
Still
right.
Yeah.
It was still the majority of what I did with clients for a very long time because there was so much, oh, this is just a fad.
Yep.
Oh, this is so.
Yep.
But once people started realizing this was something they needed to care about, It was the immediacy, right? Social media and digital is so immediate. Like, we were used to these long lead times of, like, print and, like, TV commercial production, radio ad production. Like, that's social media and websites. It's like, oh, well, we could have that change by tomorrow.
Now.
Like, you know.
Did that change, like, just the nature of doing business? Because, I mean, like, immediacy and, delayed gratification and all of those things kind of go out the window. It's like, I want it now. I want this and it should be able to happen now.
Yeah. And even with clients, it was kind of like, well, why can't you get the printing done faster? And, you know, like once they got used to the speed of some of the digital stuff, it was then they no longer had patience for the other things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Did you see in that transition of, did you have big impact did it have on your faith at all? Like in the faith journey, like did you see big changes? Because anytime there's a big world change, it impacts social media. Because it impacts the church and faith and everything like that. Because, you know, with AI, the first thing you see is like, what is AI going to do? Does that mean, you know, what about God? And you're like, hang on, slow down, folks. But like, there is always that response from the faithful who are like kind of afraid of the new things or embracing it. And there's that conflict too.
Yeah. You know, I think it was interesting because when I was working at my next agency, because that we lost contact with Verizon Wireless, so they shut down our office and my coworker again came to the rescue.
Yeah.
I went to a boutique agency, but I ended up having my first child and I went back to work part-time there, which is amazing. That's like unheard of in the ad agency world, but it still wasn't quite working. So I switched. I was looking at other opportunities and the church we were attending at the time created a part-time marketing position because they were trying to figure out website and social media and all this. And so I was very active in the church and they knew me. And so they reached out to me going, hey, we think you could really help us. Cause they're like, we're really scared of the it was exactly that. We're really, yeah. So this was in 2011. And they were like, we know we need to do something, but we're scared of doing it wrong. And we don't like want to put the wrong impression out there. Yeah. Like, so it's really interesting that I feel like churches and even a lot of people, faith, like in the church, when I tell people what I did, they'd be like, oh, you're doing all that digital stuff. Like, yeah. You know, like it was almost like that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
There was a little bit of a stigma with it.
Yeah. Cause like I know, cause I was doing some like, I was talking to a church about their social media, my church about their social media, and one of the things that right now they're like, we're not going to be on TikTok because TikTok is so associated with, or the people that they work with to get out of like pornography.
Right.
They're like, a lot of their gateways is TikTok, yeah. And they're like, so we don't want to support that, you know, type yeah. of a thing, and so they're kind of it, like there's both sides of it, right? Like yeah. there's the people who are using it for good,
right.
But unfortunately they tend to be the minority, right. You know, there's people yeah. who are selling all kinds of stuff online, you yeah. know, so yeah. But one of the things that's really funny, like you've already said it probably like five times, is that like every stage it seems like somebody is reaching out to you and asking for these things. Like, how do you establish a disposition, I don't know, an aura yeah. of approachability. Like, what is it that makes people come to you and say, hey, can you do this? Or can yeah. you help me with this? Because that's not everybody's experience.
Right. I think one of the, you know, and this is the last thing I don't think I did necessarily intentionally, or I wasn't conscious of the fact that I was doing this, but looking back, I've learned this lesson, is I make my intentions and desires very well known to the people I'm working with.
Mm.
So like that first job into marketing, it was my coworker knew I was getting my MBA because I wanted to advance in my career, which is not going to happen in sales necessarily. He knew I was interested in getting into marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was kind of like, hey, like, we'd get along. I think you would get along well with my wife. I know this is what you want to do. Right. So it was like, he was trying to help his wife, but also help me. But I think that's what I've always, and I'm a networker. I talk to everybody. and I'm always trying to see if I can connect to other people too. So
yeah.
people just tend to reciprocate, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, there are those people who are just networkers. They connect people. But what I like about what you said there is the making your intentions known, because if you're part of a community, like a community tends to want to help each other.
Right.
Right. But we're so isolated these days where it's like, no, I'm going to keep my business to myself. Yeah. I'm not going to talk, like, I'm me over here in this little pod. But like, if you just open yourself up to your community, then your community can help you. You can help right. them. And it's not, it's not necessarily sales. It's just right. like, hey, community, you can know who I am
yeah.
and that's okay.
You know, yeah.
like that's super interesting. Like, I don't think you have to push anything.
No, you right? just you let just, people know.
Just and let them know let who them you in. Are. Yeah. That's interesting. Cause I'm the polar opposite, like, right? Like at work, everybody's like, we don't know who that guy is. Like
yeah.
he doesn't talk, he doesn't smile. He's just the weird guy in the corner,
yeah.
you know? And I'm like, I don't know. Like this isn't like, I kind of don't want my intentions known because yeah. they have nothing to do with the day job.
Right. right? And in that case, it might work. Although who knows, right? There might be
also
somebody
true.
In
that
here.
That is true.
That has the right connections for you, but.
Wow, that's super interesting. Okay, and then, so how do you transition from going in the business world to, so this is my personal information, right? Like you went and kind of did some entrepreneurial mm-hmm. Things.
Yep.
So like what made you shift into that arena?
Yeah, so funny enough, when I was looking to figure out, my daughter did not ever take a bottle. So when I was working part-time at the ad agency, it didn't go well because she was miserable, and my mother-in-law helped as much as she could. But I was trying to figure out, I needed income because my husband was in an iffy job situation at the time. And so once again, a coworker of mine goes, hey, my husband started this marketing company from home.
It's so ridiculous.
And I know you're struggling with the baby, you know, and everything like that. And she's like, he only wants people that work from home. Would you be interested?
Yeah.
And I said, yeah. And so that was how I started working from home. But then my husband got his current job offer here in Arizona, which is why we moved here almost 11 years ago.
Mm. Okay.
And I called my boss of because he had intentions of opening an office eventually as well. So he was only hiring local. So I called him and said, hey, this is, and he knew our situation. Yeah. And I said, this is what happened. He's had this amazing job offer. We're moving to Arizona. I know you want local people. He's like, okay, no, clients love you. I don't have a lease anywhere yet. This and that. Let's let you, you know, you could continue working from Arizona until I have an office. So I was 6 weeks pregnant with my son, and I got the call from my boss saying, so I just found an office, signed a lease, office opens in 60 days. So your contract with us ends in 60 days.
Okay.
And I went, crap. I'm 6 weeks pregnant. I can't go job hunting.
Right.
And my husband had been telling me for years, he's like, you've helped now two startups basically build their way up on marketing companies. He's like, you have all these years of experience. You have your MBA. Why not just do it on your own? I went, I don't want to.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I had done little entrepreneurial things here and there, but I didn't see another choice. I needed to find a way to have income, and I wasn't going to go on job interviews and lie that I'm not pregnant.
Right.
And
then they're not supposed to judge you, but
yeah,
they do.
And I also didn't want to be that terrible employee that gets hired and like 4 months later has to go on maternity leave.
Right.
Like, that's just, just didn't
sit
well with me.
Yep.
So that's, I kind of started doing marketing consulting on my own because I didn't have another choice that
right.
I saw, you know?
Okay.
And so that's how I started. And that was, I built that entirely from my network and referrals of former clients from big companies who had gone off and started small companies, or they had a friend or whatever. I just put the word out.
Right.
And I had my first like six clients within 2 months, probably.
Wow.
Just from reaching out to my network.
Yeah. So what made you change from going from the entrepreneurial back towards the stable? Or of teaching, coaching with a big company, and
2020 killed my business basically.
Oh, okay. So COVID.
Yeah.
Just kind of crapped on everything.
I was launching a course which did. I literally launched it the week the world shut down. But thankfully, because people are like, oh, I have all this time now, I'm going to buy the course. So I did that. The course did okay, but I had, you know, I was still only working part time because I was working on my doctorate, and I was still teaching as an adjunct, and so. I didn't have a ton of clients, but it was still a decent monthly revenue.
Yeah.
And a couple of them completely lost their businesses. A couple of them, like, I had two speakers, like, that travel a ton. Well, their business
was
gone.
They were shut down completely.
Yeah. So things like that. And so my revenue dropped by, like, 80% within the first 2 months of COVID happening.
Oh, jeez.
And so I was like, okay, what am I going to do now?
Pivot. Yeah.
And I was just trying to figure it out. And one of the things I always do, this is the first job I found, not by somebody telling me, but one of the things I always do is I'm always looking on LinkedIn for my students.
Okay.
Because I have such a large connection. And this ad popped up, and I read it. I was like, this is totally written for me, this job ad. And I was like, whatever, I guess I'll just apply. And so I got the call for the first interview. And so I told my husband, he was like, you've never not been offered a job you've interviewed for, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I guess. He's like, you better be ready to have a decision. Do you want this job?
Right,
I was like,
right.
I don't think I want that. I had like a real job and, you know, God knows how long. And he's like, well, you got better start thinking about that. And so I went through the whole process going, I don't want the job. Final step was interview with the president. And I said, well, I'm a mom and I'm involved in my kids' school. Like, I go work in the classroom. Yeah. I go do this. This is early 2021, early 2021. And she's like, that's fine. You just work around, like, block on your calendar and we'll work around it. By the way, I also teach college in person one day a week for a couple hours. And she was like, that's fine. Just put a block on it. We'll work around it. And I was like, this is the president of the company saying
right,
that. So she's
right.
like, I was a stay-at-home mom for the first 6 years. I get the importance and blah, blah. And I was involved in my kid's school. And I was like, okay, well, how could I say no?
Right.
It was literally like, I wasn't looking for it. I didn't apply.
They actually
for
like stick to it all too. Cause like there's a lot of people who like tell you that stuff. But then as soon as it comes to the actually doing it, they're like, no, you need to do
that. That's why I'm still part-time with them now is because they're an amazing company and they were consistent. They even gave me, I was in the middle of writing my social media textbook when I started there. They let me block off 3 hours every Monday so I would make sure I had focus time to finish my textbook.
Wow.
Like, I mean, just amazing people. And so, it was that once again, I think that was totally a God thing because I was not looking for me. I hadn't applied anywhere else.
Yeah.
I didn't think I wanted a job. I just wasn't sure what to do.
You just needed to do something.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so then how did you get back into teaching? Because, like, I you had done some teaching. Like, you said you've been a part-time teacher, but, like, did you teach for Arizona Christian?
Yes. So I was an adjunct for Arizona Christian University for 2 years. So that's starting in January 2015, so a long time ago.
So that, and how did you get into that? Like, I mean, because that's not like, you have this kind of business line where you're like sales and marketing and then coaching. That all makes sense. Right. But then, like, there's this other line of teaching that seems kind of separate. How did you get into teaching?
So when I got my MBA, I kind of had this wild thought of, like, someday I want to try teaching college. Like, I'd always, like, I tutored in high school. I was a trainer at many restaurants. Like, I was teaching. I was an Awana leader at my church for 5 years, teaching kids, like, it's Sunday school during the week, you know. I'd done VBS. Like, I was a women's Bible study leader. So, like, I like teaching people. I always have. And so I had, like, you know, in California, I'd applied to, like, adjunct faculty pools and whatever online. Like, nothing ever came of it. But when my son was, like, 6 months old, I don't know, I just was really feeling like I need to try this college teaching thing. Like, I need to figure this out. And my husband, who's not a businessman at all, but his brilliant idea was, like, well, why don't you just, like, look up the heads of the business departments or business schools, all the colleges in the area, come up with, like, a sweet little email, ask them if they're willing to meet you for a cup of coffee just for some insight, right? Don't send your resume, don't do a long thing, whatever. I was like, that's a good idea. So I did that, and the subject line literally said, your insight for a cup of coffee. And I said, hey, dear so-and-so, my name is Krista. I was wondering if I would be able to come to your campus, buy you a cup of coffee, and meet for 15 minutes to get your insight on how I might be able to get my foot in the door in the college world someday. I have my MBA, dozen years, sales and marketing experience. Yeah. Every single person either emailed me back or called me back out of 8 people that I reached out to, which is amazing, right? Because people like to help, right?
Yeah.
So the very first person who literally called me on my cell phone an hour after I sent the email was the dean, the head of the business department. He's now the dean of academics. At the time, the head of the business department at Arizona Christian University. And he said, do you have time to come to campus this week? I was like, yeah, that'd be great. And that's just the kind of man he is. He is such a mentor. Like, he loves to mentor and help people.
Yeah.
So I met him at the coffee shop, and we're standing in line. And he goes, so tell me about yourself, right? Elevator speech, engage.
Yep.
And I had it, and I said, marketing, an MBA. And he went, marketing? You said marketing? I was like, yeah. And he's like, and what did he say? He's like, are you a believer? I was like, a Christian? Yeah, I am. He's like, do you have time to come to my office? And it was just, like, literally that week, he had gotten his adjunct that had taught principles of marketing for, like, 5 years there, was moving out of state. And so it was like, once again, it had to be a God thing, right? Because it was like, I sent this email with the perfect timing and got to meet him. And so we went to the office, had a great interview. He took me over to meet the dean of academics. They said, great, you can teach principles of marketing in the spring semester.
That's hilarious.
I didn't even have a resume.
Right.
Like, send me a resume. Like,
yeah.
That's how I got into college teaching, but it was to teach marketing. So that was...
Was teaching college what you thought it would be?
I'm not even sure if I fully understood what I thought it would be, right?
Okay, that's fair.
But, I mean, I did a lot of studying, and I was able... Now their dean of their school of education there. She's an amazing instructor. She always helped teach and, like, professionally develop all the professors there. And so I was able to meet with her for some ideas and help, and I did a ton of research. But a couple weeks in, I was like, this is what God called me to do. Like, I went home to my husband, and I was like, because he always joked, he's like, you're going to get your PhD someday. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm not unless I teach college.
Right.
And so, like, a couple weeks in the semester, I'm like, this is what I want to do. Yeah. This is what God called me to do, is teach. I know it with every ounce of my being. He was like, well, duh. He's like, so when are you getting your PhD, right?
Like, it's so funny when everybody else around already knows, but, like, sometimes you just got to get through it.
Yeah. So anyway, so that was, and so, I mean, from that moment, that first semester on, I knew that's what I want to do. And so it's been a little bit of an interesting journey up and down.
Right, yeah, because getting to be a college professor is not an easy process at all. Like, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's very hard. And so, like, when you become a college professor, like, it's kind of got a golden hook, too, because it's so hard to get in that, they stay there.
Yeah.
They don't go anywhere, because going anywhere, promoting anything, is hard. And so they kind of get in there and then they just kind of root in and then they stay forever.
Yeah.
So that's super interesting. So how, like, I can only imagine, like, when you come into that space where you're like this, like, you have, almost have, like, the revelation moment where, like, you know, the, like, this is what I'm supposed to do. Like, how did that change? Did you have a perspective shift? Did anything change around it? Or was it just, like, you became single-minded? Like, what changed once you had that revelation that, like, yep, this is it. It strikes the chord.
Yeah.
This is me.
It was trying to figure out, how do I get to teach more classes
and
here?
It was just how to do
and
it.
How do I get better at this? If this is what I'm supposed to be doing, I need to do the best I can be at this.
Was there things you had to let go?
Not initially, because my first semester I only taught the one class.
Okay.
And then the next semester I only taught one class. And then I started with two. Then I did go full time at ACU after 2 years, but
okay.
Which was, that was another like odd, weird timing thing that worked out. But,
So were you able to do teaching and full time career at the same time, or like, were you career and PhD?
No. So my kids were still really young and only in preschool part time. And so when I was just starting as an adjunct, I mean, I never had my client load full. I was never full-time with my business when they were that young.
Yeah.
So I kept that. Like, I worked about maybe 15 to 20 hours a week on my business, and then I taught one class for, you know, a while.
Okay.
And then even with two classes, that wasn't that much more of a time commitment, and I did it, was able to do it while my kids were in preschool.
Okay.
So then
with the kids transitioning into like full-time school, is that kind of, state where you're like, okay, now I'm going to go full-time as well?
That's when I amped up. Yep.
Yeah. I've had that thought too, where like, I was like, do I want to be a manager? And I was like, I'm not while my kids are at home. Cause I work at home now and I'm like, I get to come home or like go downstairs and have lunch with them. And I'm like, I don't want to lose that, you know? And so like, I was going to wait until they are full-time in school.
Yeah.
And then if I had to go back into the office, then, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do that now because no, I kind of like being at home. It's a big deal. So
Daniel turned one a week after I started teaching my very first class. So like, I had a whole year with him where I only worked from home on my business.
Yeah,
about 15 hours. So like,
that's so important, man. Yeah. Like they like, it was one of those things like we all thought it would be nice to work from home or you know, but I don't think anybody really understood how. Nice it would be, or how important it would be to work from home, because the kids are the biggest ones. Like, I didn't realize how much time I was losing driving.
Yeah.
Like, I was working an 8-hour day. Everybody works an 8-hour day. But I was also driving an hour to and from work. And so, like, it was actually a 10-hour day.
Yeah.
And then you're tired and frustrated from the drive. So you need 30 minutes or so to decompress. Yeah. So, like, I would get, you know, 40 or an hour and a half with the kids.
Yeah.
45 of that spent cooking and eating dinner.
Yeah.
Right? So
it's not much.
You didn't have any time with them, you know, and you'd have that. I would have those times where I was like, it seemed like they just shot up. Like they would go from this height to that height.
Yeah.
And I was
like,
what happened?
Yeah.
You know, but
I was gone for the day and you grew.
Yeah. That's what it seems like. But it's because I wasn't home.
Yeah.
You know, and then now I'm home and I can hear them changing. I can hear them developing. I can see them change. Like since I've been working from home, I haven't had that big, holy crap, you're this and now you're this. Like, cause I've been there
you're
whole time.
There. Yeah.
You know?
And that's what my kids, both my husband and I always agreed that, like, we wanted me to be able to stay at home with them as much as possible.
Yeah.
We also both knew that I would never be, like, the 100% stay-at-home mom. That's just not me.
Sure.
I needed something to focus on.
Yep.
But I was able to do it from home, right?
Yeah.
I joke, and I tell my students this all the time, too, is, like, I do the mom check with my kids, like, the gut check. What's mom's number one job? And they go, us. And I said, if they ever don't say us, then I know something's out of balance.
Right.
Because in spite of like how many things I've done and how much I work sometimes, like they don't see that. Right. Like when I pick them up from school till they go to bed, it's them.
Yeah.
Right. I pick them up from school every day. You know, I mostly take them to school, like Greg started doing this here and there. But and so in spite of my career and all the things I do, they're still my number one job, and they know that. And they will tell me, honestly, there's been like once or twice where they've been like, I don't think it's us, Mom. And I'm like, oh, crap. Okay, what do we need to fix?
Yeah.
You know, so.
That's so huge. Because we use the phrase all the time, properly ordered. You know, and like when you get disordered, you lose your priorities, you start losing the things that are important.
Yeah.
So I love that you've kept the order consistent, and then you have the feedback loop. Let's use our business terms, right? You have the feedback loop to make sure that you remain properly ordered.
Yeah.
And the impact that that's going to have on the kids, I think, is immeasurable.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, where I came from, like, my parents worked split shifts. Like, they were there all the time. But, like, it's not like the way that, you know, Kristen is there for my kids. Right? Like, it's a different kind of there because she works, again, from home now. And it's a different level.
Yeah.
And you can see it in the kids because we were... Beforehand, you would like send them off to daycare or whatever, and then they would come home, and you would almost have to like reprogram and be like, "Hang on, you learned a whole bunch of crap that I am not okay. Like, let's unlearn that, and let's relearn how you behave, you know, type of a thing." So, I think that's a big deal. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So then, what do you think have been some of the big lessons that your career has pushed into your faith? Like, you've had to reckon, because I mean, like, you're teaching. You have to interact with a lot of people, like talking about a lot of concepts. Like, what are some of the things from teaching and doing business that has kind of pushed lessons into your faith?
You know, it's been interesting is, especially once I moved to community college almost, you know, 4.5 years ago now, about it has taught me to be more open-minded in a way, because if I'm more open-minded, then they're more willing to come talk to me about deep questions or deep issues.
Okay.
And not that I was ever closed-minded, but I just... Once again, I spent most of my life being surrounded by mostly Christians, right? And so in the community college, you got everything. Chandler Gilbert was interesting because it's also a very heavy Mormon population. Yep. So I've had a lot of Mormon students, which my first boss in marketing was Mormon. So like and I've had a few coworkers. So I actually know a lot about that faith. I mean, have like the Book of Mormon that somebody gave me and, you know, things like that. So I know a lot about it. So, but it really, I just had to realize, like, A, I'm not allowed to verbalize first about my faith in public school, right? But I, by talking about who I am and what I do, then they figure it out.
Yeah.
And by being very like open and authentic about who I am, what I do, and by being open-minded to hear all about what they are about and what they believe, I've had so many students reach out to me and ask me questions about my faith and ask me questions about their faith or like their issues in life. And like, and there's this like, just they trust me because they see that I'm going to be truthful with them, but I'm also going to be kind and loving.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing. The two things that I get feedback I get from students is, number one, that I'm knowledgeable in current real world stuff. And number two, that I care.
Right.
And, you know, unfortunately I know in this world, especially the last couple of years, there's a lot of Christians that have made this look bad, right?
Yeah.
Like not being loving.
Yeah.
And so that's, I've really learned that. Like I, you know, it's funny, like teaching, like and listening to other students, even seeing other students interact like in class or in discussion boards of being so kind and respectful to each other when they completely had different belief systems.
Yeah.
It's been like, oh my gosh, like we could, some of us in the church could really learn that, right?
Yeah.
Not saying that you condone bad things,
right,
but like, but not being judgmental, like just hearing and like when you build that relationship.
Yeah.
Then you can have a way more impact on them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. AJ talks about it all the time. And it's funny because we just recently did an interview. I don't know how the order will come out when we publish it. So, but we interviewed my cousin who is a second grade teacher. And similar topic came up where it was just like, you know what? If you just care about the kid, care about the person, like trust builds. And there's, it's so important. And, you know, teachers have a huge impact on kids' lives.
Yeah.
Like, I think we underestimate. I don't know that we underestimate it anymore, because, like, there's kind of, like, a big push for teachers and education and stuff. Like, we realize how much of an impact teachers have on kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully they would wield it for the good, you know, and not everything else that they're doing right now. But it's a big impact. Just, like, having... And they were talking about how... There's a lot of kids that don't have people that care.
Right.
Which is sad, but it's the truth, right? So, like, when they interact with somebody who's like, hey, I actually care about you as a person.
Right.
You know, I don't just toss you away. Like, they kind of latch onto it because they're thirsty for it.
Yeah.
And they don't get it very often.
Yeah, and it's funny you said that specifically, because I remember just this spring semester I had a student who was trying to quit school because he's like, I'm not cut out for this. I can't do this, like, blah, blah. He came from a very poor area in Kentucky. His mom had and him had moved out to Phoenix area. And I said something to him, you know, and I was talking to him and whatever, and he's like, is it okay if I hug you, Mrs. Fabric? And something, I always tell him to call me Krista or Professor or Fabric, whatever, but whatever. He just defaulted to Mrs. Fabric. He's like, you were the first teacher that has ever cared about me. And I went, 19 years old in community college. Then I'm the first teacher that's ever cared about him. Like, what?
Yeah.
Like.
Well, it's a big deal because I still remember the first teacher that showed. I mean, I had good teachers. But, like, each one of the ones that seemed to actually care about me, like, I can remember their names, their faces. Yeah. I can remember everything about them. One of them, you know, the first one to actually see something in me and push me to a different level.
Yeah.
Again, I can remember his face, name, everything about him. Like, huge impact.
Yeah.
Like, it changes the trajectory of kids. And that's the importance of teachers, because if you can change a trajectory 1 degree, right, over their lifetime,
that's
a big impact.
Deal. Yeah.
That's a big impact.
Yeah.
How about, so that's kind of interesting. I was going to say, like, how does your faith inform your career, and like, how does it drive that? But probably pretty similar principle, right? Like, loving people.
Yeah. Doing it with excellence, you know, right? So both jobs I have, you know, and just general life philosophy. I'm naturally a hard worker. My personality type is achiever, but I try to look at it, you know, from Colossians 3:23, do everything that's for the Lord, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's that. When I'm teaching, like, I want to be the best darn teacher that there ever was, like, other that I can be, right?
Yeah.
And the students see that too, right?
Yeah.
And that makes them respect you, which then often leads to trust too. They see that you care, and they see that you're really trying to do your best for them.
Yeah.
And those two things go. They learn. Like, I don't have required attendance in my classes. Like, it's not required.
Mm-hmm.
I have participation points that can improve your grade if you show up. If you don't show up, you can still get an A if you get an A on everything else.
Yeah.
And I have, like, a 90%+ attendance rate. Like, they want to come to my class because I make it valuable to them and I make it engaging, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like if God's called me to do this, I need to do the best I can so I can have the biggest impact on as many students as possible.
Yeah.
And by having them actually show up in the classroom, that's my opportunity to impact them, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's the proof that you are, right? Like, the results don't matter, because even if you impacted one kid, that's a big difference, but the fact that they are there is like, you're doing well, you know? But I think what I love about that is that is the beauty of stepping into your calling all in, is because, like, once you're in it, you want to do it well.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and you know, so, like, if you're doing a job, because I've worked plenty of jobs that are not my calling, right? And it's just like, you know how to do the job well enough to not get fired, right? But you're not pursuing excellence, you know, like, we know that.
Yeah.
Because it's not what you're called to do. But then, like, once you do, and you're like, oh, yeah, like, this is what God has for me, then it changes kind of the perspective, and you want to do it well because it's how you serve. It's how you impact, and you can see the results in it, right? Like, there's so many of us that work the day job, and you're like, there's no value in what I'm doing. Like, what am I going to do? Make rich people richer? You know, like, that's what I always hear from people. They're like, what? My job doesn't add value to human life. All it does is just make these rich people richer. And I was like, I can't argue with that a lot of the times. But when you're in your calling, it's not like that. Like, it's different. There's meaning and impact to what you're doing that kind of compels you to keep going further.
Yeah, and it honestly, like, there are parts of my teaching, like, that sometimes, like, updating all the due dates for, like, the class to start.
Everything has something that sucks.
But generally speaking, like, it doesn't even feel like work to me because it's just what I'm built to do, and I enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I feel lucky that I've discovered that, right?
Yeah.
And not everybody gets to discover what their calling is.
That's the truth. It's a sad truth.
Yeah.
But it is. You're right. And I love it.
Yeah.
So if you were looking back over your story, right, what do you think would be the lesson? Like, what life lesson would you say, hey, take this and go?
Yeah. So I think it's actually, I had one that I was thinking of, but I'm going to tie it into the calling thing. So I tell this to my students all the time, too. It's like, if you don't know what your purpose is in life, or like what you're called to do, whether or not they, you know, whether or not they're a Christian or believe in any God, like they, everybody knows, like they have, they're built for something, right? If you can't, if you don't know what that is, or if you can't make a full-time income out of that or whatever, I'm like, then find a way to pursue it on the side, right? Go help a nonprofit, go help at your church, go, you know, start a little side hustle pursuing that, like find a way, because you are never going to feel fully satisfied in life if you don't have passion about, in some, about something you're doing in your life, right? And if you're, if you're built to do something but you don't know what it is yet, then just, you have to try things. Like, don't be afraid to try. My, my career has been a lot of zigzags, but it's all tied together and put me in this place now where I feel like, I feel, I truly feel like I have found the balance where I can sit for the next 20 years. Working, you know, part-time for this coaching and training organization and teaching full-time. And I feel pretty, like, content and, like, secure that, that that's a good path for me and my family, you know? And so, but I would never have gotten here if I hadn't tried all these other things.
Yeah. I like that. And it makes me think of, again, my philosophy class, where, you know, the, they always teach you the unexamined life is not worth living, right? That's the line that you get in philosophy 101. But it, to take that further into Christianity, it's kind of like, if you're a Christian, it, I'm going to be extreme here, but it's not okay for you to not know what your calling is.
That's true.
Right? Like, that's true. You have to, you have an obligation to step out, and not all of us get a burning bush,
right?
Right? Like, I'm just going to keep going with Moses. I don't know why I'm on this Moses kick today, but like, not all of us get that direct line.
Yeah.
Right? I'm one of them. I've never had a direct line. But if you don't, then you got to just go try something.
Right.
What you have to do is you have to move. Right. And then in moving, you find, oh, I don't like this. So then you can adjust and you can do those things. And so if you don't know what your purpose is, you have to do something. I love what you said. Just do something small. Just start moving. And then you'll get the information from moving.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you get the feedback. You're like, oh, I like this. Oh, I don't like that.
Yeah.
And then you just kind of fine tune and then you'll get there.
Yeah.
Right. But you have that obligation as a Christian to find out what God made you for and maximize that, because that's what he's calling you to do.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's the thing is, like, if I, you know, I hadn't gone on a limb, sent all those emails, gone and met that, you know, person for coffee, I would never have gotten, cause it is extremely hard to get, even as an adjunct, to get hired. And so I would never have gotten that first class, which then I wouldn't have necessarily discovered my full calling, right? I knew I liked teaching people, but I didn't know to this extent.
Yeah.
And now, as full-time, I'm going to have the opportunity to impact a couple hundred students every single semester. Like, that's crazy, right? I mean, just insane what an opportunity that is. So, but all because I just tried.
Yep. And I think that, I love that. That's huge. Because, again, that's what you've been doing in your whole story. You know, like, I'm putting it out there and you're trying it and people are impacting you and you're saying yes and you're adjusting. Mm-hmm. Like, that is your story. Looking back, like, listening to it, it's just kind of been, like you said, zigzags, but it's movement. Like, you've always been moving forward, and then you come to that place. And I think, again, the hard part is we all think we should be there right now.
Yeah.
But that's not always how it goes. Like, sometimes, you know, the lessons that you learned in business were necessary,
right?
You couldn't get to where you are right now. You needed that experience and that time to learn and develop. Because, like you just said, the real world experience is why you have credibility with your students.
Mm-hmm.
And that credibility is the reason why you're able to impact them.
Right.
So you're not going to get to your calling just like magically, oh, I'm ready.
Yeah.
No, you have to be prepared for it, to do it, to have that impact. So patience also, you know, like, is a big one. So.
Yeah. I mean, and I was 36 when I taught my first college class. So it's not like I figured this out real early, you know, and now I'm 44. So it's like, and now I... Even though I knew teaching was my calling, now at 44 is where I'm like, okay, I'm finally here.
Yeah, and even though once you have the calling, there's still some development time in getting into it.
Yeah.
And that you didn't just give up on it when it didn't stop. Like, once you knew it, like, that's fantastic. I like that lesson. I think that's really good. So why don't you let everybody know to reach out to you if they got any questions on any of the stuff you've been talking about, because I know you are on social media.
I am on social media, and I'm on pretty much all the platforms, but I'm the most active on Instagram. So I love a ton of my students follow me, and former students, because they just love, you know, to learn from me and reach out to me. So that's the easiest way. So it's just Krista Fabric, my first and last name, on Instagram, and you can find me there.
Fantastic. Krista, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. This was fun.
All right. With that, we will say adieu. We'll be right back. about like all of the really young kids listening to it, because you're like, I don't like, this is what like this the generation before music. Me felt like when they see these kids wearing like Led Zeppelin shirts, right. And you're like, do you even know who that is?
I know
is?
They're walking around with Sublime shirts like, and like,
you
yeah,
don't I'm know
like,
who that
Metallica.
Is.
Metallica. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know what's funny is I saw Fred Durst from Limp Bizkit was doing it, and he was on like Bill Maher's show or something, and he's got this giant gray beard, and I was like,
you're not that old.
I don't know how I feel about this.
Watching those like icons from when we were teenagers be old now, it's like, oh crap, does that mean I'm old?
That's I'm not accepting that.